薄いのアホ。
プリズムタワーメイクアップカードレ
ディー。 Welcome to Shoujo and Tell, where we discuss shoujo manga and tell who's hot and who's not, talk about themes, and just generally geek out. Today, April 29th, 2018, we'll be shoujo and telling about the second half of the series Fushigi Yugi by Yu Watase. So that's volumes 10 to 18. I'm your host, Ashley McDonald, and I'm joined by Caitlin Moore and Jess Tan. They've both been on multiple episodes of this podcast at this point, including the first FY one, so if you don't know who they are, I mean, they're famous by now. I just don't know how to help you at this point. Okay, but seriously, Jessica is like my best friend who like got me into FY, and yay. Caitlin is like part of Anime Feminist and has Heroin Chic blog and like does a lot of shoujo stuff. Okay.
Heroin problem.
Oh, heroin. Did I play it? Yeah, I mixed it up, didn't I? I said Heroin Chic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So Caitlin is the head of Heroin Problems. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Woo. So I initially had the like segment of us just like trying to not spoil what the ending was, but then I was like, that's way too confusing because there are two different storylines that end here. So I'm just gonna throw the spoiler warning. This is about the second half of a series. There's two different stories that actually happen in this. So if you haven't read FY and you care about spoilers, like, don't listen to this. Go read it. It's available from Viz. It's actually pretty cheap because it's like 3-in-1, so you can get the all 18 volumes for like $60 or something ridiculous. So go have fun with that, my friends. Yes. So I guess to jog people's memories of what happened in volumes 10 through 18, it is basically volumes 10 through 13 are the what I will call the real ending, the legit ending to what was the actual story arc of FY. So, you know, Yui and Miyaka manage to summon gods in their little battle against each other, and then they save the worlds or whatever. That's fun. They stop Nakugo from world domination. Cool. That's pretty good. And then volumes 14 through 18 are what Watase called part two or a sequel, which involve Tamahome becoming this Taka. Like, he is at the very end of the real arc, I guess, but like it just follows his existential crisis as there is a new threat to the world as well. It's like something that it's like some faux god that the, you know, four real gods had sealed away a while ago, but Susaku's power is waning in the real world, so he's like coming back or whatever. I don't know. There's a lot of weird things that happen in this that I was like, I can't bring myself to care that hard, to be quite fair. But yes, okay, so start off real easy. What was everybody's favorite bits, or at least bit, of these volumes? I'll start with Jessica. Let's go.
Okay, this is super easy, and if you listen to the first episode, you can probably guess it's Noriko.
Just all of Noriko?
Yeah, I mean, every scene that he's in is just so funny or moving or powerful or just beautiful. So, you know.
How did you feel about Noriko's brother? That arc.
I thought it was very interesting because the focus during the first half was always about his relationship with his sister. And,
yeah,
you know, probably no one remembered that he had an older brother. So it's very, I think, great that Yu Watase did have the chance to bring in this other sibling and show how losing his two younger siblings affected him so much. And I think that Noriko's ability to revisit his family and help his brother move on was really powerful. So I really enjoyed that. Even though his brother was a much less attractive version of him.
Whoa, thrown down right here.
He was like less attractive Noriko with Hotohori's hair.
I don't know.
I can see it.
Yeah, it's like the long hair and the like loose side ponytail.
But it's not as like shiny and glossy and
okay, we get it. Nobody's as good as Noriko and Hotohori.
Hair-wise.
Yeah. It's hard to beat their hair. Okay, Caitlin, what was your favorite part?
So are we talking about like the second half is in part two, or we're talking about like second half is in like the numerical second half?
Just do numerical second half.
The ending of the first half.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I don't mean that like cynically, like I like that the first half ended, but like I really, really enjoyed the way that the story concluded and finished up Miyaka's arc. I don't think bringing Tamahome back as Taka was necessary. But yeah, no, definitely like how they wrapped up the first half.
Yes, it definitely should have ended there. I was so confused because Watase even has a panel at some point where she's like, the next volume is the end in volume 12. And I was like, wait, what? That's not true at all.
I read that to him like, yeah, that seems like what I remember being the end.
Well, yeah, as story-wise.
But where are these like, other five volumes coming from?
I was so confused. And then I was like, oh no, the OAVs were real.
Yeah, editorial mandate.
I know. As soon as I was like, obviously they wouldn't let you stop this. But like, oh no.
Yeah.
Ugh. What did I like about the second half? Okay, I am pulling a Jessica here, and I will just say that yay. I did really enjoy all the Toski moments and Chichiri moments that we get to have in this like weird sequel thing.
Except for one part with Toski, I assume.
Yeah, but he was controlled. I'm like, I don't like this. You are being controlled by somebody, so. I'm going to forgive you, Toski, for becoming a rapey boy. And that is not good.
I mean, yeah. the chat calls made it sound like it was something that he wanted to do anyway.
I mean, yeah, they definitely frame it as a thing that it was like deep in his heart he wanted to do this. But if he had been normal Toski, he never would have given in. But because he got possessed by whatever weird henchman person. Oh, no, the henchman person was related to Chichiri's story, right? It was the dude that he quote-unquote killed.
His best friend. Well, he did kill him.
Himself. Yeah, no, he...
According
to himself.
But according to reality,
according to Survivor's Guild.
Yeah, according to Survivor's Guild, he definitely did.
Yes, we're in agreement.
But in general...
As far as we knew from before actually getting to the sequel,
yeah,
we were told that he had killed his best friend.
I know, but then I was like, Chichiri, you sweet boy, you didn't kill him.
Yeah. No, it's true. And that was another really that was good another and good. Really touching.
Yeah. If Noriko were in that, that might have been my
lack of Noriko makes it.
I just have this thing for best friends who have a falling out and then figure out the misunderstanding and reunite, even if one is dying and melting into a pool of water.
All right. So I feel like we have generally spelled out some feelings for the endings, but do we generally feel that it definitely just should have ended at 13?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed the extra stories about the backstories of people, of certain characters.
Right.
And I kind of wish that we had even more backstory. For example, Chiruko always gets kind of the short end of the stick or whatever it's called, because we don't really know much about him. And I don't think we got that much more about him, even with the sequel. But I really enjoyed getting more of Chichiri's story and, of course, Noriko's story. And, like, seeing Hotohori with his family was kind of cute.
It was kind of weird.
Kind of weird because he was controlling the body of a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, yeah. Kind of cute, kind of weird.
I know. Toski has a line where he's like, this is getting a little too weird for me. And I was like, I agree with you, Toski.
Yeah. No, it's even better in the anime because Hotohori's deep voice is coming out of the screen.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
And also there's like a teddy bear that has demon tentacles coming out of it. So like they're all being suspended by the tentacles begging the baby to put down the teddy bear.
Put down the tentacles, baby. Put it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that scene was weird.
Yeah, but when baby said his first word after being silent for the first 2 years of his life, come on, that was really cute.
There was a good joke in there. Like, Miyaka was like, I didn't know dada. The Dadaism or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Or Toski said that, and Chichiri's like,
just
no.
Like, the humor in Fushigi Yugi is just like, shit tweets.
It is, though.
Like, all the stupid, like, puns and one-off gags that they make, like, and all the stupid asides, like, it's basically, like, the everyone else is watching that scene and commenting, making shit tweets on Twitter about it.
I love
before,
it.
Like, 10 years before Twitter existed.
Yeah, and then I want to post them all on Twitter, but I'm like, oh, I'm so deep into it. Such spoilers. I did post that Toski one because I was like, I just agree with you too hard, Toski. So do people, even though we definitely think it should have ended at 13, do we like the sequel? We like it for bits, but do we like the actual main story of the sequel?
It's hard to, like, it's really hard to say. Like, there are parts that I like, but in the end, I think as Taka's story, it's more interesting than in the beginning when it started off feeling like it's supposed to be more Miyaka's story. And then it's like Watase realized, like, oh no, like, this is not interesting. The much more interesting part is like Taka dealing with his identity. So I think after that, it improved, but I think overall, no.
I would agree. I don't know. I just had such trouble like reading it. I was like, I just don't care enough. Like, I can't bring myself to care.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the fact that I'm not as invested in Tamahome / Taka's continued existence.
Yeah.
And that became the central problem. Like, before, as the world was going to end, right? Kind of?
Yeah.
I guess the world was ending again.
I mean,
with
it was,
Tenko coming
like, that's also the problem, is that it just felt like a, like, crappier retread of where we had already been.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
I think I had been too invested in the first go-around against the world ending that the second time it happened, I was like, okay, if Taka disappears and all the memories of him disappear, I'll be really sad for a little bit, but not as sad as, like, if the first arc ended in disaster, or more disaster than it already did end in.
Yeah.
It is my sincere belief that the first arc should have ended with Miyaka, and I know this is not an ideal shoujo manga ending, and it never would have happened, and I know that this is also how Yuatase wanted to end it at first.
Yeah.
It should have ended with her going back to her world and going back to her life, and with the lessons that she learned through her experiences in the universe of the four gods, and moving on. That is what I sincerely think.
Well, I don't know if she would have moved on, or if she would have just repeated what the priestess of Genbu did and just continued and died.
That's the thing, is that, like, I think everyone can move on. Like, I think it is possible for everyone to be able to move on from loss. It is harder for some people than others, but I think that, like, people, like, no matter how in love you are with someone, if you lose them, like, you may always miss them. They may always be a part of you, but, like, you can move on with your life. You can still live your life. Like, and, like, Susanoo, the priestess of Genbu, like, she did live her life at least somewhat. Like,
Miyako.
Oh, no, this isn't in the manga.
Oh, sorry.
This isn't in the manga. Just in the anime, like, she had a family. She grew up, she got married, she had kids, she had grandkids, she lived a long life. She might have missed him, but, like, she still, you know, she lived. And I think that is the better ending. Like, I don't think every teen romance needs to end with marriage.
True.
I agree. But yeah, just from the manga alone, there's no real indication that the previous priestess really did move on.
Right.
All we know is that they still loved each other in their own worlds. And I think that's already powerful enough. And she lived to the age of 80 something. And then they both died at the same moment, which was all we were told.
Right. I was like, I can't remember if they mentioned family. Got a little weird there trying to, like, track down the universe of the four gods and, like, explaining who was what. And I was like,
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, like, a weird, I don't want to say weird, but like it's an interesting ending knowing the other two stories, but that Watase didn't write them first and that she writes this like, like time wise, I guess it makes sense. Miyaka is kind of the last priestess, even though we read her story first. So for her to be like, sure, after all these other terrible endings for the other ones, like Miyaka gets to have this like weird, epic happy ending. But it's just so strange reading it and being like, this is what Watase wrote first, and then all the other ones get to be like sad stories. Like, I don't get it.
Right. It doesn't seem fair. Yeah. It doesn't seem fair that Susanoo and Tatara didn't get to live happily ever after if Miyaka and Tamahome did.
I know.
Well, like, I think this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that there was a lot more editorial input.
Yeah.
And more control, and you, Watase, couldn't actually tell the story that she wanted to tell.
Right. I'm kind of jumping back and forth between two modes of discussion, which is talking about it as a work and talking about the influences and what sort of shaped that, and also talking about it as sort of a self-contained universe. Like when I say like it doesn't seem fair, like it's like, you know, that's talking about it like as like, you know, a story and the things in the story happen because of narrative reasons versus this thing in the story happened because the editor said so.
Damn editor. Ruined everything. Swear.
Damn editor. No, I love my editors.
I love editors. I am an editor, but also like, leave Watase alone. Damn it.
Well, I think they did let that happen more. And that's why we got the super sad stories.
Yay, super sad stories. Super.
I like read somewhere that like, or like heard on a podcast that like she had a really hard time when she was working on Arata, which is her shonen series. Yeah. And like her editor there was really mean to her and just like, you don't know what shonen is. No, this is wrong. You have to change this. Then you didn't, you know, I don't like what you changed it to. Change it back. And was just like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've definitely heard nightmare stories of her working on Arata and like being like, I think even in the side panels for that, she'd be like, I submitted all these pages. And then they'd be like, nope, I hate everything here. Redo.
She's so honest. I love how frank she is in her side panels.
I know. I love also seeing how she has to be like kind of covert about it. Like with the ending stuff, she's like, yeah, like I initially wanted it to be this way, but then like as the story went on, I felt like the other ending was fitting. I'm like, did you?
Yeah. Well, she also says things like, oh, you know, I wasn't sure about this, but everyone else seemed to like it. So,
Shruggy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'm like rereading the side panel about how she had planned for Miyaka and Tamahome to split up at the end.
Yeah.
And then she's like, no, I'm glad that I lost. I'm like, are you? And
I'm really? Yeah, I'm like, no, I don't think you are, though. Yeah. Whatever.
And she tries to make it about the characters winning and winning over her, their creator. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I sort of believe that, but come on.
Come on.
That's like a 16-year-old girl and a... Wait, is she even 16 yet? No, a 15-year-old girl.
She had her birthday, right? Yeah, she turned 16. Did she? Yeah, in the sequel.
Well, in the Herbert, she has the same birthday as me, May 12th. Yeah, she has her 16th birthday in part two.
Sequel. Yeah, right. Yeah. So when part one is ending, she's still 15 and he's 17. Yeah. So like, really, you can
they
win
get
against
aged up in the
your
sequel.
15 and 17-year-old.
16.
Yeah, makes a big difference.
Totally. I think what I have most struggle with the like sequel is the fact that like not only was Tamahome reincarnated and made into Taka, but then he has like some whole family that was made up, and I was like, how far back does this have to go?
No, that's what it seemed like.
Okay.
And that's what he was thinking while he was on the phone with his mom one night. But later, towards the end, they explain that, like, he existed in the world already.
I don't believe
this.
Right,
yeah, he was.
And his family. Yeah, like, he's actually a real person.
This is
and they end up saying that Tamahome existed because he existed or something weird like that.
Mm. So hard.
Like, I, yeah, there's so many like weird shit happening that they throw at you. That's really hard to miss details like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they don't give a lot of focus to like certain moments like that. Where it seems like they're very important.
Yeah, like I feel like all the important moments, like they happen over a span of two pages. And then I'm like, wait, what is even happening here? Like I have to reread them to be like, what is the, like, how did we get from here to this action thing? Like what mini panel did I miss in here that like makes this make sense?
Like Suzaku at some point says that Tamahome existed because Taka existed or something like that.
Come on, this, I don't buy this at all.
I don't buy any. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the whole Tamahome Taka thing anyway.
I mean, I kind of like the Tamahome Taka thing because that kind of narrative in general appeals to me, like the being reincarnated and sort of, you know, who you were reincarnated from, but like trying to struggle sort of like between, who am I now? Who was I then? Which one is the real me? And just sort of like that sort of identity struggle. Like, I think those narratives are really interesting.
I agree, except I just wish you were dead. Or not dead, but like in his own world and not a real person. I shouldn't have said dead. Sorry. Too strong.
Die, Tamahome.
But yeah, like, you know, that's interesting, and I just think that it kind of, like, by not putting enough emphasis on the scene where he finds out that, yes, he is a real person, yes, he did, like, he has lived his entire life, he is Taka with his own life, not just, like, some, shadow,
right,
Home. Like, I feel like so much more emphasis should have been put on that scene, because that is such a, like, a big struggle for him, and that was, you know, sort of really important to his character arc, and it just sort of like flipped past.
I mean, it is the last two real pages of the volume.
Two pages, come on.
Yeah,
I don't know, I just feel like, I mean, it's so many pages.
Suzaku does explain, like, I didn't make you up, you're a real thing.
I don't know, I just feel like there's,
I don't know,
so
how
much...
you missed it.
Because I read it really quickly in a car before a hockey game. Yeah.
And they even recap back to when Tamahome was like, oh, you know, if I were real in your world, like, we'll meet.
I remember that, but like that didn't, I don't know, like reading it didn't make it super clear to me. I don't know. Because I also just feel like half the words, I think I started like really going into skim mode, not just from a time point of view, but from also like, I'm like, you guys say all the same things. Like, yes, you love Miyaka. I get it. You love her to death. Like,
yeah, like, it gets very repetitive. And if you're not, like, totally 100, it feels like it's the epilogue at that point. Because I went back to, and I found the point where it says, and it's just, like, in a text box of, like, Suzaku being like, no, you're just, no, you're real. Don't worry about it. Like, it's okay. And not, like, there's no, like, moment of, like, realization. Like, there's the emphasis in that scene is the love between Miyaka and Taka, and if you're not like totally 100% on board with it, they are the perfect, like, in
meant
love
to be.
Like, meant to be destined lovers, like, which I don't think any of us totally were at that point. Like, forever. It's so easy to just get past that. So, like, yeah, like, it just feels like such a missed opportunity, like just such a flubbed landing, because it makes it about Miyaka and Taka as a unit rather than Taka having his own story arc like Miyaka got to have.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because like definitely on the surface level I'm like, yeah, Tamahome Taka existential crisis, like I should be all about that, like shadow people, you all merged, you fought each other, like lots of stuff is happening, like great. But reading it I was like, I just don't feel it though. I don't feel it. In
like
my heart.
It's just the last volume feels like you're just being beat over the head with like, they're in love. They're in love. They're in love. They're in love. They're in love.
Well, I think that's how I felt about too much of the series, even in part of the first half. And
yeah,
during the first episode I complained about
it. Yeah, you did.
So I'm trying to refrain. I'm trying to refrain. But just there is like that really powerful scene where Miyaka is supposedly killed.
Yes.
By Tamahome, and Taka's in shock.
Yes.
And then he realizes that, like, actually, Tamahome is me, and they reunite or whatever, he absorbs him into him. They hug
and then they become one person.
Yeah, they hug. But I kind of wish that Tamahome, as he was being absorbed or whatever, you know, accepted it and wanted to join with Taka. Because obviously Taka was like, yeah, Tamahome is me and I'm going to hug him and like suck him into myself. But Tamahome was kind of resisting. And it's like, oh, I think it would have been so much more meaningful if, although I guess Tenko is still in control of Tamahome or whatever, but like,
I was going to say, so Tamahome was possessed, right? Like, that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still annoying. Yeah.
But he also never saw Taka as like a real person either. He always, even though Tamahome is reconstructed from those seven stones and is technically actually the shadow, I guess that connection, I had to make it on my own. And it was like a lot of work for me to realize that. And I think that, like, it would have been nice if there were more, I don't know, there were just too many things happening and not enough attention given to any one thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, too many things happening, but also, like, I care about none of them.
Like, it's like after the editors made her make that second part, they're like, okay, all right, we're losing them. Wrap it up. Come on, let's go. Wrap it up. And like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, it could have been another 12 volumes.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah. Great. Oh, my God. No. Far too many.
Yeah.
Too many volumes. Okay. So I guess I kind of want to go back. Well, this can be a combo real ending versus sequel ending of like, focusing, I know that, like, you know, the last part is Taka's story, basically, but we do get Miyaka and Yui, like, graduate metaphorically, literally, from middle school to high school, sort of become adults. You know, they summon gods, they almost died, one of them did die, but the other one revived them, you know?
Like, she wasn't dead, she was true. Just
she
absorbed.
Was absorbed by a Seryu.
And of course, yeah. When she reappears, she's naked in a pearl bubble.
Of course.
But, yeah. Fan service. All the naked people.
You can't be a Magicka girl without getting naked. But yeah, just like, how did people feel generally about like Miyaka's character trajectory and Yui's character trajectory?
I thought it was really, I really, really liked it. So I think that there are some points where they kind of walk back Miyaka's character development just to like, just for the sake of drama or like plot contrivance. Mm-hmm. Like the part where she just runs off to the pagoda without saying anything because it's like, Miyaka, come on. Yeah. We've been over this. You don't
It's her MO. She can't change that fast.
And then she's like, oh no, Tamahome didn't get here right at sundown leaving. Like, I got a plan now.
Or like the part where Tamahome breaks up with her without saying anything.
Oh my God.
She did that to him earlier and it was really sucked. So like, why is she doing that to him now? Like, please. But I do think overall, like, there was some really good like character growth, like her and Yui sort of having to, like, finally getting it figured out, finally being able to meet and talk about things, and Yui being ready to accept what Miyaka is saying. I thought that was really, like, just emotionally satisfying. And seeing the just Miyaka's ready to face her life now. And, I thought it was really, really great.
Yeah, it's like, I guess part of my frustration is that, like, you know, Yui and Miyaka go through so much in the first half, and it's so satisfying. It's all so weighty. Like, the way that Tamahome, like, kills Tsuboshi is really, like, clever, but also, like, so emotionally devastating. Like, all these moments that lead up to all these things, and you're like, yes, Miyaka and Yui now have just gone back to their life and, like, live normal and what? I don't understand. I don't know. In the second half, I was like, yeah, you're more mature, but not in a way that seems like they went through a whole big, weighty, end of the world, gravitas sort of thing, you know? And then even reliving that with them in the second half, I was just like, what? I can't, there's no weight to this. It just doesn't feel weighty enough. But Jessica, how did you feel?
I feel like Yui oftentimes is the gravitas of the two priestesses that we see in this series. Mm-hmm. Miyaka's like the bubbly, happy, go-lucky idiot kind of type. And she does have her deeper moments, and she does have like, she does stand. There's like one scene of her looking sad as she's like thinking, she had a moment where she was got sad. Into high school. Yeah. And, you know, like, I hope that we meet again someday or whatever, whatever. And like she does have some deeper moments. But I think Yui is the one who really has always been the more mature appearing one. And I think that continues, even though mm-hmm. they both underwent such traumatic and devastating and adult situations.
Yui became a dragon.
She did become a dragon.
She was eaten, by, a dragon.
By a dragon.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, but it was also cool that she came back out because her friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that like Miyaka doesn't change as much as Yui does. And part of Yui's change is recognizing that like, oh yes, I have always been jealous of Miyaka, and I have always envied her ability to be loved, and that was what destroyed our friendship, not anything Miyaka did, but my actual, you know, hidden jealousy. And her coming to accept that at the end of part one, where she then wishes that Miyaka can summon Suzaku, is like, I think the point where you can see the most growth in terms of either of the priestesses. Miyaka just doesn't seem to change all that much. And maybe that's why I don't. Maybe that's why I'm not as like on board with her and Taka finding their happily ever after. Like, yes, they earned it, I guess.
Did they?
But okay. I'm more invested in Yui getting a happy ending, because I feel like she actually grew and changed.
Presumably, Yui grew and changed because she like lost literally all of her celestial warriors. Like, even though, you know, in the end, it turns out they were all like manipulating her or whatever. I feel like she had genuine feelings for Nakago. He comes back as an mm-hmm. earring in part two and saves her at one point mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, so like Yui, I don't know. Yeah, it's like Yui clearly had the demeanor of somebody, I guess, who went through very traumatic things and came out the other mm-hmm. side. Whereas Miyaka, by always having Taka, was just like, whatever, Miyaka, like you're a little more mature now, I guess. But
mm-hmm. yeah, well, she is still only 16 for some yeah. of it.
I feel like I do feel like the second half just kind of does not really carry through Miyaka's development. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, especially when they go back to being like, whatever, like we're gonna get married, like don't try to stop
us. I'm gonna drop out of high school. I'm gonna just, and yeah. marry you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was like,
oh my gosh, that was so frustrating.
No.
I almost threw up when I read that. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not okay.
Like, why? Like, it's not, it's just, yeah, no, that part made me so mad.
Yeah,
because it's like, why wouldn't you want to have a high school degree still, Miyaka? Like,
it's also like she's abandoning her own future.
Yeah,
just like, to be, and maybe this is our backgrounds and our perspective being put on to Miyaka, but like the reasoning behind it, and then the fact that she never repeats that afterwards is like, I don't think you actually want to be a stay-at-home mom. And if you did, yeah. that's fine. Like, there are people who are stay-at-home parents and are very happy and successful doing that, but I think she was defaulting to just running away again. And that's right. what pisses me off. Mm. Excuse me. That's what angers me, because yeah. I'm fine with people like being content and happy and fulfilled mm-hmm. doing that, but I don't think she's that person.
Well,
so
no,
when she made that statement of, oh, I'm just going to quit school and stay at home and be a housewife, like, maybe that would make her happy. But
doing it right after, just like right after they have sex for the first time too, is yeah. like, like, really? Like, you just like, you have sex once and that's it. You don't need high school anymore. You don't need like any other prospects other than staying home with him. Like, losing your virginity is like, you know, it is culturally a big deal. It is not actually a big deal, but like, you know, it's not like I can't even like to put into words just how just dumb
yeah
a choice that is. Like, it's like once she has sex, like that's it. Like the only thing that is a sign that like she is a woman now, she should get married, all of this, like, and once she is married, she doesn't need education. She doesn't need a job. She doesn't need anything except her husband.
Yeah.
Which is like, no, like.
Can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think what I was trying to say earlier is that it bugs me that she basically wants to like convert or change her entire identity to become his wife.
Yeah.
And while I think losing virginity being a culturally important thing makes it an actually important thing for the people experiencing that,
sure,
and who
sure.
experience that, those cultural mores, but like I was just so upset with her because it's like you've done so much, you work so mm-hmm. hard to get into high school, you in fact like are super happy about getting into high school and being with some of your friends and meeting new people, and like you're at that moment when she first gets into high school, she's thinking about Tamahome and how she wants to meet him. But actually meeting him makes her go back to just running away from her life again.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely. How she was at the very beginning when she was avoiding, you know, the stresses of real life and opening up the book and escaping into a new world. So it really just puts me off that her default is to just run away and to become, you know, like, my identity is going to be intrinsically based on this one thing. And she, I think, would have been happy having a very, like, a life based off of loving him. But I guess to me, that's her way of expressing it as a running away mechanism, as an escape. That's what puts mm-hmm. me off. Like, if you really want to do that, if that really makes you happy and complete, fine, go for it. But if you're only defaulting to that because you're scared, then I'm going to fight you on it and try to make you see sense.
Right.
I also just don't like it because Taka clearly never was able to hold a job for more than 10 seconds. So I'm like, who's gonna make money here? Like, I know that Tamahome was a money grubber, but like I haven't seen it from the Taka. Like,
well, we haven't seen the success of
Taka. Yeah, I haven't seen
the money grubber.
Yeah, and it's, I like just anything that's like making deciding what the rest of your life is going to be when you're 16, 17 years old. Just like, ugh, no, don't do it. And I don't know, just the attitude towards their romance in general in this. Like, I spent so much time talking in the first part about how I actually really like them as a couple, and Tomomi is so sweet and really supportive, and like actually like, you know, helps her with her growth. And now like in this, and I stand by that for the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I do. But in the second part, like he just like her, she reaches the end of her character arc. She figures out what she's going through at that moment, and her development just stops. And she goes right back to that like girl who is completely defined by her relationship with her boyfriend, who has nothing of her own going on. And it's just, it's so frustrating. And just like the way that, like, honestly, the way that Taka talks about her in this volume in some places is really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, oh, he's like talking about like, oh, in 6 months, you'll be a sexy woman.
Oh, yeah.
oh,
yeah.
Oh.
There definitely could have been some editorial input there.
I just was like, there were definitely scenes where I was like, I'm just confused about like why this is happening. Like, these characters just don't otherwise seem like this. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was so very strange. Yeah.
Not enough Noriko.
Not enough Noriko.
Noriko would put a stop to this.
Yeah.
Noriko's ghost needs to figure how to get to the real world, the quote unquote real world. Ugh. Okay. So yes, Miyaka could have grown a little more. Probably again, better if we stop at just the actual ending of Fushigi.
Yep.
Were there any other like large themes that you wanted to bring up before I go to this shoujo, how Watase feels about shoujo generally topic?
I think I'm good.
I think we've complained enough about the second arc.
Okay, we could bring out how lovely, you know, like Byakko warriors were or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to Byakko Ibun being translated.
I am too, especially after, yeah, like seeing how much of the other FY stories were actually seeded in this that I didn't really remember. I was like, wow, yeah, like Takiko has like a character design. Like everybody has like a character design already. Oh, mm-hmm. Snap. Okay.
I want to see. It's weird because Subaru and what's his name? The pervy old dude.
Yeah, the pervy old dude. Ah. I don't remember his name. What was his name?
So
his name is just pervy old dude.
Okay. Well, this is a terrible thing to say. Like I forget his name, and then I'm gonna turn around and say that like I'm interested to see their story because like I don't particularly like him as a character or anything, but I would, you know, in the Fushigi Yugi stories with the Suzaku warriors and with the Genbu warriors, it was all like, you know, they're falling in love with the priestess.
Right. Oh yeah. Okay.
But I'd like to see a healthy story or healthy-ish story about two of the warriors falling in love with each other.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because you kind of get that with Soy and Nakago, but like...
Mm, that was not a healthy relationship.
Yeah,
that was actually like, something I wanted to bring up during part poorly, one. Right? Yeah, and the sex, the bedding technique or whatever.
Bedding technique. Yeah.
Oh boy. I really wish we had more time during the first podcast episode because there was so much we could have gone into with that.
Whoa, we can talk about them in Shipping Corner.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Yuwatase does give them a whole page in the second half.
Yeah.
Where she's like, oh, what I imagine them to be like. I'm like, mm-hmm, sure. Okay, they're dead.
They're dead. So. But yeah, I guess, yeah, Kaylin's point of like, it is the only known instance where warriors fall in love with each other, but he's such a pervy old dude who hits on everybody. So it's.
Yeah.
Complicated.
Oh, that old dude.
What was this guy?
Oh, I know who you're talking about now, but I forget his name too.
No, we don't remember his name. Byakko, Celestial Warrior number 2. Part of me is like, he looks really cool, so I feel like I will be tricked into liking him in Byakko.
Sure, they do have good character
designs. I know.
We're so shallow. It's okay.
So I'm like, I really...
Shallowness has its place in the world.
But like, I don't want to like him, but I'm also like very curious, you know, now that will be the last FY story that Watase is getting to, and she's clearly like matured as a writer. Like, how is she gonna like? She's probably gonna try to walk back some of it. So I'm like, I'm very curious. This is basically what I have to say about that. Yeah, but then I also just generally wanted to talk about, since you know Watase is very forthcoming in her side panels, but she also has many where she tries to describe what shoujo is in general, or at least to her. And I was like, I don't know if I agree with you on all these thoughts, but like, there's one where she's like, FY is essentially a shonen manga, but it's really sad, and that's what makes it a shoujo manga. And I was like, is it?
I don't remember this panel. Or sidebar.
Yeah, I forget where it was. I took a screenshot on Twitter. I can like read it to you for real. So she's like comparing it to her first story, which I don't think I've ever read. Was it ever published here? Prepubescence?
It never came out in English, okay. I don't think.
That's what I thought. Because I was like, I feel like I would have read it otherwise. but yeah, she's like, Prepubescence was a character-driven comedy.
Oh, no, I do remember this.
Yeah, so the characters were most important. So for this one, I thought it would be best to make it story-driven. Of course, that's a big exaggeration. But I went with my personal tastes, so I wonder what kind of story it turned out to be. What are my tastes? Oh, come on. You know. Look at the love scenes. One or two in every installment. Friendship. Fights. Adventure. And other staples of the shonen world. But throw sadness in there, too. That's what makes it a shoujo manga. But it's also fun. A rip-roaring fantasy. I was like, I don't know that I would ever... I don't know. There's just, like, too much emphasis on the romance for it ever to occur to me to be a shonen manga. And there's another panel that I don't have right in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I did not screenshot, where she was talking about how, like, you know, again, everybody expected her to write shonen manga when, like, as she was growing up, and mm-hmm. she didn't read a lot of shoujo manga. She was like, it's boring, I don't care about these, like, emotional stories. But then she's like, okay, wait, I get it now. And then I was like, dude, okay. I don't know. So yeah, I was just like, does anybody else have opinions on, like, what she says about shoujo manga, or, like, shoujo manga, what a shoujo manga is to you in general?
I feel like she kind of, and it's a weird thing to say, because she was really influential for a while. Like, Fushigi Yugi was a big deal, but, like, I feel like she really sort of underestimates exactly what shoujo manga can be. And I feel like that kind of almost comes from a place of, like, not like other girls, not like other shoujo manga authors. Mm.
Yeah, it does kind of scream that, doesn't it?
Because it's not like shoujo doesn't have this, like, incredible tradition of, like, sci-fi and fantasy that goes back to the 70s and the 60s. Like, the Year 49 group, like, wrote a ton of, like, really groundbreaking science fiction and, like, adventure stories. Like, there was a lot that was, you know, plot-based, that it was plot driven, but it also placed a lot of emphasis on the interiority of its characters. And, you know, because to me, that's sort of like what is the defining element of shoujo, like what I feel like shoujo is. Like, getting into, like, what is shoujo is, like, a whole other thing.
Can of worms that we shouldn't open.
Yeah, it's like, but, like, you know, that's sort of like like what I am looking for when I go look to shoujo is the interiority of the characters. That is what good shoujo is to me. And when that goes hand in hand with a good plot, like, that is just, like, you know, perfect for me. Yeah. So, like, when she's like, oh, it's a shonen, but, like, with emotions and romance, then, like, I feel like she is really not giving this her demographic that she's writing in enough credit. You know, I mean, you know, she was young.
Yeah, she's,
but, like,
she's probably like, I walk it back a little.
So, like, yeah, that's sort of my feelings on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really like the, yeah, it didn't occur to me that it definitely screams the, like, I'm not like other shoujo manga artists in the same way that it's like, I'm not like other girls, I was the cool girl or whatever. And I'm like, oh, no, it's the worst. But
we all had that phase.
Yeah, we all had that phase, it's true. I also feel like she's underestimating, like, what good shonen is. I don't know, but yeah, lots of underestimation here. Do you have any feelings, Jessica, or no?
I mean, kind of echoing what you both have said, I think she is kind of maybe looking at things with blinders on. Maybe she just, maybe part of it's also what her editors were telling her. This is not shoujo, mm-hmm. or this is too shonen or whatever. And maybe that's why, if she was getting a lot of pushback and their reasoning was, oh, this is not what shoujo manga is, maybe that's why she has kind of a, you know, the view that she does have, at least when she was writing these panels. Mm-hmm. Because she loved drawing those fighting scenes.
Oh, yes.
Apparently.
That's what she says. Yeah, she's like, I love drawing fights.
Yeah,
that's what fights. She
says. Yeah, and we're all like, okay, that's great. But, you know, apparently her editor told her to take it easy on those and not to focus so much on those or whatever. And maybe they told her, like, oh, you know, this doesn't belong in this type of manga.
Yeah.
So I think part of what she is thinking as, like, definitive might be coming from pushback that she's receiving. Like, oh, you're not drawing what we want you to draw, so we're going to tell you this is what shoujo manga is. So it's just like a way to corral a young, rookie, inexperienced author to make them fit the mold that you want them to fit.
Right. Mm.
So maybe we should give her a little more credit.
Maybe.
Maybe she's just reflecting all of the bad advice that she was being given at the time.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, this is all sort of conjecture anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
It's weird to think that like sadness would be the key to shoujo. I'm like, because doesn't everybody want happy endings? Like, you just want everything to be sad, Watase. That's just your brain. Like,
I mean, I can sort of see it as like sort of a necessary part of the thinking of it as a necessary part of the character arc for shoujo manga. Like if you think about it, like most shoujo series do have like some part where they have to deal with tragedy or sadness, or, you know, like that's just sort of the nature of exploring emotions. Like, if you're going to have a story with conflict that is also primarily emotionally driven, then characters are going to get sad.
Yeah.
And I also think that we see that in some shonen stuff as well. Like,
yeah,
people die a lot and there's, you know, very heart-wrenching moments. And I don't think it's defined or limited by the genre or the target audience. But again, this is, what, 20 years ago that she said this stuff?
Over 20 years ago. Long. Don't talk about it. It's so long.
Yeah,
time is so terrible. You know. Okay.
And shoujo manga has changed a lot in those 20 years. And maybe what we have been exposed to is shaping what we think as well. But like at the time she wrote this, certain things that we experienced didn't exist yet.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to move on to two very serious segments now, you guys.
Okay.
First, we're going to do hair corner. We're going to do shipping corner. Uh-huh. Okay. Hair corner is just who has the most fabulous hair. Caitlin, who do you think has the most fabulous hair? See, it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
It really is.
Hotohori's baby.
Hotohori's
baby. With his little tongue.
All shaved except for the little spot in his forehead.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
It's true. I love this answer. It's clearly the only right answer.
I would never have even thought of that as an answer, to be honest.
I totally thought of it as an answer. I was like, I really hope I gotta bring it up if nobody else does.
I mean, I'm sure it's fabulous, but come on. His father's hair is so long and glorious and shampoo commercial worthy.
Is that your answer? Not Noriko's hair?
I don't know.
Yeah, you can't choose.
It's hard. Like, Kotohori's hair is never cut short.
It's true. He doesn't have varying hairstyles.
Yeah, he's very consistently drawn with the fabulous hair. And I love Noriko, but his hair is not what makes me love him. Kotohori, though, his hair is a big part of
it. Now I'm curious what Kotohori would look like with short hair.
Yeah.
Bring me pictures. Pictures of Kotohori with short hair.
I feel like he wouldn't be nearly as attractive. I feel like most of his charm would be gone.
Like, we'd all hate him.
I mean, he does have some variation. He has it in the bun sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget
the bun. Got it up in the crown.
Yeah, with the crown thing. No, he's definitely less cool that way.
But then, like, when it comes down out of the bun, oh, that moment is magic.
It's the best moment.
Oh, with the glitter in the air, like, oh, I just feel that moment.
Okay. Shut up.
Okay. And his fight scenes, I just imagine his hair just flowing behind him, and, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, and then somebody probably cuts off, like, a strand, and he's like, how dare you?
Blemish the
bone. I will kill you now with my magic sword.
You mean like the part where he dies for no reason?
I mean, he kills someone in the process, right?
No, because he only
hurt him a little
bit.
I was thinking Soy, but that was
someone who was already dead.
So no, he died. For no reason.
Yeah.
He just came along for fun and died.
Now I want to watch the anime so I can see the animated hair.
Oh, that's true.
Bakugo needed someone to monologue about his plans.
Yeah.
That might actually be why.
Terrible. Terrible reason. Anyway. Obviously Chichiri has the best hair. I don't know what all of you are talking about. How does it even? I don't know.
Especially when he has a hat on top of it.
Yeah, what even is Chichiri's hair? Like, I don't know. Like, what is happening?
Inspired by a chicken?
I don't know. But it's great. It's fabulous, and I love it. Also, my cutest Miyaka for me is Miyaka in a ponytail, and I liked Yui with long hair.
I liked Yui with long hair, too.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, good. I thought people were going to be like, no, short hair Yui forever.
I mean, I think it was just maybe part of it was like we see her with long hair when she's back as a friend to Miyaka. And I've already mentioned how much their friendship means to me. So I love it when she's like on Miyaka's side, unquestionably.
Yeah.
And that happens more often when she has long hair.
I mean, she definitely has a sterner feel with her short hair, especially I feel like she looks a lot like, you know, Miyaka's mom with that, too.
Yeah, she has the same hairstyle as Miyaka's mom when it's short.
I mean, it's a little longer than Miyaka's mom. I think Miyaka's mom's hair is even shorter, right?
I don't know. They basically look like the same really character.
Okay.
Except one of them's younger.
Okay. Plot twist. Yui actually is Miyaka's mom.
Ooh.
Time shenanigans.
Oh, man. Wow, that would be great. I think that's worthy of this manga.
That was terrible.
Oh, wait. One more hair thing. I like how when Tamahome's shadow reappears, he has long hair again.
Hair is very important.
I was very excited to see him with long hair.
Okay, wait. Preferred Tamahome form is with long hair then? Okay.
I really like when the guys have long hair. Like, Noriko's hair, I really liked it when it was long. Mm. And I also actually quite liked it when it was cut. But then again, he's my favorite character. So I think I just like him in any form. But yeah, Tamahome, I like him with his long hair.
Okay.
Although I don't like it when his long hair is out. That was weird.
Oh, yeah. No, he has to keep it in that thing. He has to tie that up. Yeah,
in the little rat tail.
Yeah.
Still doesn't look good. Like, Hotohori with his hair down, fabulous. Nuriko with hair down, fabulous. Tamahome
doesn't have enough hair to keep it down. It just looks weird. It's sad.
Well, it's a mullet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, put that away. Put that back.
Yeah. Put it back in the rat tail, please.
Toski with wet hair. Best Toski. Toski being like, I can't swim. I'm so sad. Best Toski. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I like his little bromance, though, with his gang leader.
Yo, wait.
His second gang leader.
He has a bromance with Chichiri. Don't lie to me. Don't. And
he also has bromance with Taka.
Yes.
Yeah, right and after Tamahome. He tries to rape Taka's girlfriend.
Yeah.
They got the best bromance, though, so they cool. Oh, boy.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
All these ships can be discussed in Shipping Corner.
Favorite part.
Caitlin's like, I have so many feelings, and they're not all good.
I feel like we've covered Taka and Miyaka pretty thoroughly.
Yeah.
It's true.
I'd rather not have to revisit that.
It's hard to think of Taka and Tamahome as the same person, even though Watase insists they are, right? Like, it's just, no.
I don't think she quite insists they're the same person.
She definitely does. Yeah, panels.
But she does also say that, like, Taka's experiences are real and make him different from Tamahome.
Yeah, but she really wants them to be the same person.
I think they're the same person in some way, but at the same time, they're not. And that's why I'm like, you didn't do this well enough.
Yep. All right, Watase, whatever.
It's like, you didn't think this all the way through. You're contradicting yourself a little bit. But like, Taka's experiences make him different from Tamahome. While at the same time, Tamahome is supposed to be him. Yeah. Okay, let's move on.
It's hard. Jessica, you wanted to discuss Nakugo and Soy, so tell me your feelings about Nakugo and Soy.
Oh, they have such a messed up relationship, and I think this goes back to the messed up environment that they lived in and the messed up people that surrounded them. Like, we get more backstory, and basically they were both sold into prostitution at very, very young ages. And when Soy was rescued by Nakugo, she fell in love with him, and this was when she was, like, I don't know, a young teen, it seemed like. I forget her actual age at that point. But that was the start of her kind of obsessive love for him. And I know Yuwatase has a more romantic view of their opinion, but they're having sex just so Nakugo can replenish his chi is like, this is kind of... I know Sawyer's willing to give him everything, but I don't know. I feel very icky about their relationship.
Yeah,
I
kind of wish I didn't.
Yeah, I kind of wish I didn't. I kind of wish I believed that they truly loved each other, mm-hmm. which I also wish I believed of Miyaka and Tamahome and Miyaka and Taka, but we already had that conversation too.
That's a different thing.
Oh, yeah. They are different, but I get kind of icked out. And I kind of, you know, with this whole reincarnation thing, I hope they get reincarnated into better environments and can become better people and they can meet each other and fall in love for real rather than the twisted, let's have sex so that you can replenish your chi kind of love. And let me throw myself between you and the sword so that I die instead of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Nakugo is supposed to have, like, feelings at that time, I guess.
I mean, he sort of does. Like, he keeps holding her dead body.
Ugh. Yeah, he's like, I'm going to keep holding this. This seems like a battle strategy.
She's got to start thinking by the end there.
Yeah. We don't know how long he keeps her.
Well, we all know that Watase also really loves Nakugo for whatever reason, because Watase is obsessed with sadness and weird people, I guess. But so I'm just like, I think you did genuinely want them to love each other, but that doesn't make
it okay. She never translates quite well. Yeah. But again, I'm not convinced by any of her love lines, to be honest. So it's like, not surprising.
You're not convinced by Yui and Tetsuya?
I wish I were.
OTP.
I really wish I were. Like, that's the best relationship that she displays, but maybe because she gives them so few pages and panels.
Yeah, they get like two scenes together anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, individually they get more scenes.
Yeah, he gets shown like bursting into the room when she's having a bath and like being tortured. So yeah.
Yeah. That's cute.
They don't have that many scenes together though.
How do we feel about Hotohori and his wife? Do we like his wife? Is she cool?
I mean, she doesn't really get to do much.
Except cry
and be sad and lay there and not talk.
And give birth to the heir.
Yeah, like.
Yeah.
And I also am icked out by the connection to Noriko again.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, weird.
How Hotohori was like, I felt Noriko's presence. And then this woman appeared.
Yeah. So apparently in the novels or something, like, Watase goes into how, like, they're, like, Noriko and Hoki were actually, like, best friends.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I feel like, if it had been handled better, like, it would have been clear that Hoki had, like, postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I feel like, that would probably be, like, the better way to go about it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But, like, once again, it was not sold. It was kind of a lost opportunity, so
yeah.
I mean, yeah, from the little that we get of her, I was like, you seem cool enough, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
you have a weird ugly baby, that's cool. Who do we pair Toski with? Who's obviously Chichiri, but you know, you can pick with Taka and his gang leader, and you can pick with anybody really.
Yeah.
He's
he even has some like good Noriko bonding time.
I know, Toski's the best, you guys. Yeah. Yeah. To reiterate this,
I mean, he's also such great comic relief.
He's the best at everything.
I don't know, Noriko's pretty good at comic relief too and connecting with everyone.
Okay, but Noriko got to die, so Noriko had the privilege of dying, obviously.
So sad.
Yeah, I was like, I love all these Toski moments. Mm-hmm. He is funny. He's also just like super loyal. He brings out the best in Chirico. I was kind of annoyed actually that Chirico got like one of the last scenes. I was like, really? You? Nobody cares about you, Chirico, except for Toski, because Toski's a nice boy like that.
Okay. I don't know. He also, Mitsukage is also very nice, and Chichi is also very nice. And I feel like there's a lot of big brother characters in this.
Well, Chichiri is obviously like a close second. Any other final thoughts?
I just think that like in the end, I think I like the anime better.
Controversial opinion.
I guess.
I first experienced this as an anime. And I
feel like actually that might be a popular opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, liking Fushigi Yugi in general these days is kind of unpop-up.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Is it like it's become uncool now? Yeah,
whatever. I'm happy being cool.
Haters gonna hate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was first exposed to it through the anime, and it definitely still has a very special place in my heart. But I haven't seen the anime in a very long time. Maybe I'm just thinking of it as like, oh, it was so awesome. But that was like me watching it, you know, over 10 years ago now.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do like animation, and I currently now have the theme song stuck in my
head. Oh, yay. It is so good. It's so beautiful and so sad.
Some of my friends on Twitter were talking about like the intro series where the intro kicks in like a couple of seconds before the show ends. I'm just like, nothing yeah. got anything on Fushigi Yugi there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the manga does not have sound, no matter how much Watase likes to talk about soundtracks in her freaking side panels. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to go look up all these songs, Watase, but I guess thank you. Sure. Anyway, so Toski, best celestial warrior for me. Noriko, everybody, you know, I'm just going to read this outro and tell everybody to tell us who their best celestial warrior is, obviously. Thanks for listening to Shoujo and Tell. Comments, questions, constructive criticism, concerns. Need to tell us who your favorite celestial warrior is? Email shoujoandtell@gmail.com or leave a comment on shoujoandtell.com/fushigiyugi too. We're at shoujoandtell on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram. Caitlin, where can people find you on the internets?
First place you can find me is, and probably the place you can most easily find me is on Twitter, altsoon_nodere. You can also find my writings on my personal blog, heroinproblem.com, heroin spelled with an E. It's about heroines, not drugs. And you can also find my writing on animefeminist.com and on the daily dot under the Parsec section.
Caitlin, have I ever told you that I love your Twitter handle? Because I do.
Thank you. I love it too.
And Jessica, nobody can find you on the internet. We already know this because you don't know the difference between Instagram and Snapchat. We established this last time.
It's okay. I can learn.
It's cool.
I'm not that old yet.
Yeah. Are you excited every time you see a new episode from us? If so, please consider leaving a rating in iTunes or Stitcher. This will help the podcast reach more hearts, or at least ears. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next time for The Full-Time Wife Escapist by Tsunami Umino. I've definitely read it as The Full-Time Escapist Wife before, and that just sounds like the time traveler's wife, but with a magician or something. And I'm pretty sure it's not that, but I haven't read it, so what do I know? I don't know. It's a Josei series. Stay tuned. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.